Welcome to GemaraMarkings.com, your roadmap to the Talmud Bavli. We highly recommend printing out the PDF of the DAF with the markings, or better yet, emailing us to obtain your own copy of the Shas Ozer pre-marked Gemara edition. If this is your first time visiting the site, we highly recommend clicking on the links to view the sample markings, as well as to hear a brief 4-minute audio explanation of the Shas Ozer pre-marked Gemara edition. Enjoy your shiur.
Today's shiur in Maseches Bava Basra will be beginning on Daf Kuf Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, approximately 4 lines from the bottom. Before we begin the shiur, let us glance in the outside margin under our topic heading, Nosei. Hanosein matono lemi shelo roitze lizkois ba. The giving of a gift to someone who does not want to receive it. Generally speaking, by way of background, there is a concept of zochin le'odem shelo befonov, that one is able to grant someone receipt of something positive even if the person is not present, is not in front of us. And that's accomplished by my giving it to someone else on behalf of the ultimate receiver. What is the din if I attempt to present someone with a gift and they don't want to receive it? In fact, there's a basis for a person not wanting to receive gifts. It says in Mishle, Soine matonos yichya, that the one who has disdain toward gifts shall live a longer life. Our Gemara discusses this issue at the bottom of Kuf Lamed Zayin Omid Beis, Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel. Notice we've noted an aleph over Rav Yehuda's name, cluing us into the fact that there will be another shita coming up, and you can see that's Rav Yochanan at the bottom line, who's listed as noted as Beis. So Rav Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, HaKosev Nechosov Li'acher, one who assigns his property to someone else, the Omar Haloi, and the other one, the receiver, says, E'efshi bohen, I don't want it. Kona. He receives it all the same. V'afilu oimed v'tzoveach. Even if he is there screaming, I don't want it. This will be explained a little bit later in the Gemara. But at this point, it appears, you can have someone there who's being presented with a gift, and the receiver is screaming, I don't want it. And yet, Rabbi Yudom Shmuel says that he's koneh, he acquires. For Rabbi Yochanan Amar lo koneh. Rabbi Yochanan says he doesn't acquire. That's probably the easier opinion to understand at this point. However, as we go on in the Gemara, we will see there's more to it. Omar Rabbi Abba Bar Momol, Velo Pligi. Rabbi Abba Bar Momol says there's no argument between these two opinions. Kan b'tzoveach me'ikora, kan b'shoisek me'ikora ulebesof tzoveach. The opinion that we said does not acquire, that the one who is there saying I don't want it in fact doesn't acquire, that's a case where he's tzoveach meikora, where he is screaming at the very outset, at the very beginning. Kan b'shoisek meikora ulebesof tzoveach. The situation where he is described as receiving it is a case where upon being presented with the gift, he's silent, and then a little bit later, he starts to issue his objections. We interpret his initial silence as being one of acceptance. The fact that later on he screams and protests, that is insufficient for transferring away the gift that he has already received. As we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice in the space between the Gemara text and the Rashbam, namely, to the right-hand side of the Gemara, there is a circled nun representing nikuda, a point, with a vertical dashed line extending halfway down the page. That means that we have a long point ahead of us. In the outside margin, we have a topic heading, the nosei. Hamezake shtar matono l'chaveiro al yedei acher. Someone who is presenting a document containing a gift, a document of a gift, to someone else, would be a document of entitlement of a piece of property that you're presenting to someone as a gift, and you're going to do it through by presenting it to someone else, b'fonov, while the ultimate receiver is actually standing there. So A is handing a document to B on behalf of C. The note says that this is taking place b'fonov, shemekabel hamatona, v'shosak hamekabel, the receiver of the gift was present, he remained quiet, ulebasof tzavach, and then afterwards he piped up and started to express his protest. Turning back to the Gemara, Omar of Nachman bar Yitzchok, Ziko loy al yedei achir. Someone is presenting a gift to somebody through an intermediary while the receiver is present. Veshosak ulebasof tzavach. And initially remained quiet, and then afterwards started to issue his objection. Bonu l'machlikis Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel v'Rabbanan. Whether this fellow acquires or not is dependent on the machlokes, the controversy between Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel and Rabbanan de Sanya, as is taught in the following Tanaic source. Everyone can see that we have a few lines of Gemara contained in a frame. In our marking system, framed sections represent Tanaic sources. The source says, HaKosev Nechosov Liacher. Someone is assigning his property, his possessions, to a second party, V'hoyu Bohen Avodim. And within, amongst his property, are also slaves. The Omar Haloi, Efshi Bohen. And the receiver says, I don't want them. As far as what this objection is and when he says it, that will be explained later. But at this point, we'll take it literally. He says, I can't deal with it. I don't want it. Imhoya Rabbon Sheni Kohen. Rabbon Sheni literally would mean their second master, but in our purposes it means if the receiver of this gift happened to be a Kohen. Hare Elu Oichlin Betruma. The slaves would have a right to eat Truma. Truma, a tithe that is assigned to the Kohanim, to Kohanim only. A Kohen eats Truma. Not only does a Kohen eat Truma, but his slaves, his Avodim, also eat Truma. They're called Kinyan Kaspo, that which is part of his property, part of his acquisitions. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Kivon Sheomar Haloi Efshi Bohen, since the receiver said, I don't want them, Kvar Zochu Bohen Yorshin. The heirs of the first one, the giver, inherit or acquire these slaves. V'havinon bo, and we raise a question. V'tanakama afilu oimed v'tzoveach, and according to the Tanakama that gave us the impression that the second party receives it, does he receive it even under protest? How could that be? If a person says, I don't want the gift, you can't force a gift on somebody. Oma rova v'teimo Rabbi Yochanan, v'tzoveach me'ikoroi dekulei alma lo pligi delo koni. As you can see, there's an aleph here, and under that there's a beis, and the next line after that, a gimel. The Gemara is going to go over three circumstances, and after we go through the three circumstances, then we will be able to appreciate what is the point of controversy between the two Tanaic opinions that we saw in the source. So Rava points out that if there's initial objection, that's soveach meikoro, screaming at the outset. Initial objection, the kulei alma lo pligi delo koni. Everyone will be in agreement that the second party does not acquire. Shosak ulebesof tzovach. If there's initial silence and later expression of objection, the kulei alma lo pligi delo koni. Everyone will agree that the receiver does acquire. Those two cases are simple situations where there is a giver and a receiver. And as we said, if the receiver is confronting the giver, and the receiver says, I don't want it, and he says that immediately, so of course the receiver does not receive the gift against his will. And if there, once again, are two parties, the giver and the receiver, and the receiver accepts the gift, and after accepting it, he then expresses objections, everyone will agree that he does receive it. Ki pligi, when is there a point of controversy? Shezika loy al yedei acher, when the gift is presented through an intermediary, v'shosak ulebesof tzavach, and the ultimate receiver is initially quiet, and only afterwards does he raise an objection. The Tana Kamo Sovar, the first opinion that we saw in the source, holds, Midashosik, from the fact that there was initial silence, Koninu, he does acquire. Vahai Dekotsovach, the fact that he is expressing his objection later on, Mahader Huda Kohodar Bey, he is now attempting to back out. But backing out is not accomplished through mere vocal protestation. If he wants to get rid of the gift that he's already received, he would have to pursue a new kinyan. V'Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Sofar, Hochiach Soifei Al Tchilosoi. The Sof, the end, shows us what was really taking place at the beginning. Namely, his ultimate protesting shows us that he never wanted to receive it from the outset. Bahai delo tzavach ad hashton, the fact that he was quiet until now, in other words, that he didn't scream, that he didn't issue his protest until now, the tzavar, he thought, ki lo motu liyoti amai atzvach, as long as it doesn't come into my actual possession, so why should I scream? Why should I issue a protest? The Rashbam, on the second line under the Gemara, Hochiach Soifu Shesovach, the end, namely that his screaming, is Mochiach, shows us Al Hashtiko Shebetchila, regarding his silence at the beginning, the Lo Nisratze Bematona, that he was not approving of the gift, Elo Lohochi Shosak, and but for this reason he remained quiet, the Gnaihulit Soveach, it's negative to protest, Kozman Shalohigia Matono Liyodo, all the while that he didn't take formal possession. However, as we said, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, his initial silence does not show approval. As you can see in the Gemara, there is a slash mark indicating that we are about to continue with a new idea, new topic. We also notice the presence of diamonds. and some Tanaic sources that we'll be following, the Mivneh, the structure, is explained on the outside margin under the note entitled Mivneh. Notice you have diamonds with dots following the diamonds. This is a series, Sidra Shel Braisos, a series of Tanaic sources, Shepoischen Be Shchiv Meirah Sh'omar. The sources that we will be seeing now all open with the expression regarding a man on his deathbed who is issuing a gift. So you see here a number 1, closer to the bottom a number 2, and the numbers we're referring to are found in the space between the Gemara and the Rashbam, namely to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text in that little space. And you'll notice on Amud Beis, about halfway down the page, a number 3. Tonu Rabbanon, Shchiv Meirah She'omar, Tnu Mosayim Zuz Leploni, Ushlosh Meos Leploni, V'arba Meos Leploni. A person anticipating his death, deathly ill, he says, I want you to present 200 Zuz to so-and-so, 300 Zuz to so-and-so, and 400 Zuz to so-and-so. Ein Omrim, we do not say kol hakodem b'shtar zoche, that the earlier one who's mentioned, whose receipt is recorded, is considered the earlier receiver. Rather, these three parties are said to be receiving their gift from the Shchiv Meirah at the same time. The reason that it appears in an order is because a human being cannot possibly say three separate things simultaneously. We will see a contrast case in a few moments. So as a result of their receiving these gifts at the same time, and we don't say that the one mentioned earlier is an earlier receiver, Lefikach yotza olav shtar choiv goyve mikulan. If there was a creditor that was owed money by this Shchiv Meirah, whose document precedes the gift that this Shchiv Meirah is giving, a Shchiv Meirah's gift, generally speaking, takes place at the point of his death. Hence, if this man owed money, he was an earlier creditor. As a result of them being said to receive together, they, the receivers of these sums of money, will owe the Balchov, the creditor, will owe money to him. And each one will pay a proportionate amount, namely, from the one who received the larger gift, he will be responsible for paying the larger portion of the debt. Avol, a contrast case, Omar, we've used numbers to indicate that this is a second case, as opposed to the opening of the source where we saw a one circled within the text. This is, as we said, a contrast case. If the Shchiv Meirah said, Tnu Mosayim Zuz Leploni, V'acharov Leploni, V'acharov Leploni. Notice, we've dashed, underlined the expression Acharov, indicating sequence. There was a first receiver, namely the earliest one to receive. He was mentioned, the receiver of the 200 Zuz. And then afterwards, someone else would receive a gift from the Shchiv Meirah. And finally, a third person. We'll call the third person the last to receive, or the most recent receiver. If that be the case, if the gift was given indicating sequence, and that's by featured by the use of the word acharov, oimrim, we then say, kol hakodem b'shtar zoche, the earlier receiver is considered to have a greater hold on that which he received. Lefikach, as a result of that, Yotzalov Shtar Choiv, if a creditor comes on the scene afterwards claiming that the Shchimer owed him money, goyve minho acharoin, his collection will be made primarily from the last one to receive the funds from the Shchivmera, the last gift receiver. He's most liable, he has greatest liability to pay off the Shchivmera's debt. Ein loy, if the amount that the last receiver had is not enough to cover the debt, goyve mishelefonov, then the Baal Chov will turn to the next to last receiver to collect the balance. Ein loy, if that too is insufficient, goyve mishelefnei fonov, then he will turn to the earliest receiver to collect his debt. Tanu Rabbanan, we have another source opening with the same expression, describing a shchiv meira that is offering a gift or dedicating money or land to different types of receivers. In the outside margin, we have a structural note, mivneh. In this source, we will see triangles. Dugmaois, shoinois, shel mekablim, mishchiv meira. Different examples of receivers from a shchiv meira. The three examples are 1. Bechoro, his firstborn. 2. Ishto, his wife. 3. Baal Choyvoy. We will see in the source also we featured with a diagonal dashed underline the expressions Koroilo, literally means as is fit to him. We will see later in the Gemara that the expression Koroilo really represents an extra expression, a Lishna Yesera. And we will also see with a diagonal underline, if you pay close attention, you'll notice that the diagonal follows a different direction when featuring the next three expressions in the source. They are Bevechoroso, the second one Bixubasa, and the third one Bechovo. So under each party that is going to be receiving a gift, there will be two cases, and each one is featured with a little 1 and 2 within the source. So the first example, let us start the source. Shchiv meira she'omar tnu mosayim zuz leploni b'ni b'chor, koroi lo. Give to my firstborn son 200 zuz, koroi lo, as is fit for him. Note lan, he takes the 200 zuz as a gift, and in addition to that, he is still entitled to receive his extra portion as a bechor. In other words, by using the expression koroilo, he is going to be receiving this 200 zuz on top of that which he is supposed to receive as his chelek bechorah anyway. Im omar bevechoroso, if the shchiv meira said, give him the 200 zuz as his bechor portion, then there's a different approach. The source says yodoi al ha'olyoino, the firstborn, this particular son, has a choice. He can make a choice. Yodoi al ha'olyoino literally means he has the upper hand. He has the upper hand in the sense that he can choose. Rotsa noitlon, he can choose to take the 200 zuz, namely, if the 200 zuz is greater in value than his bechor portion, he can opt to take the 200 zuz. Rotza noitel bechoroso. If, however, his chelek bechor, his firstborn portion, his extra portion as a firstborn, is greater than 200 zuz, then he will probably opt to take his firstborn portion. What we see, though, in this case, when the gift is expressed, take the 200 zuz bivachoroso, then he's not getting the 200 zuz on top of the chelik bechora, but he is presented with making the choice as we describe. This will be repeated now in another two examples. Ushchiv meira shomar tnu mosayim zuz leplonis ishti, karo'i la, Note, Lasan v'noitelis es ksubasa. If he makes this presentation to his wife and uses that expression, which we said is a Lishna Yaseris as karoi, as is fit for her, she has a right to take the 200 zuz, and in addition to that, she takes the ksuba as well. The ksuba is money that is agreed upon to be paid by a husband to his wife at the point they get married, in the event that he dies before her. Im Omar b'ksubasa, if he said, take the 200 zuz as ksuba payment, yada al ha'olyoina, rotsitsa noit lasan, rotsitsa noiteles ksubasa. As we saw before, she can then make the choice. She can take the 200 zuz as her payment. If, assuming that the 200 zuz is more than the amount of her ksuba, she would opt to take that. However, if her ksuba is greater than the 200 zuz, so she can opt to take her ksuba payment. And the third example, Ushchiv Meira, She'omar, Tnu Mosayim Zuz Leploni Baal Choyvi Ko Ro'ilo. Ushchiv Meira, who says, I want to present 200 zuz to my creditor as is fit for him, Notlon V'noitel Es Choyvoi. He takes this 200 zuz, and in addition to the 200 zuz, he's able to collect his debt. The imomar b'choivoy, noitlon b'choivo. If the shchimera said, I want to give him the 200 zuz as payment of his debt, so he'll take them as payment of the debt. The Gemara now asks, what is the significance of this expression karoilo, that entitles the respective receivers to receive both amounts, the gift plus that which is owed to them? The Gemara asks, Mishum de Omar Karoiloi Noitlon Venoitil Es Choivoi? Is it because the giver, the Shchimera, used the expression Karoilo, they're able to receive both? Vidilma Karoilo Bechoivoi Ko Omar? Maybe the koroilo means as is fit to pay off the respective debt. Why is it that we're interpreting koroilo to mean something above the basic debt owed? The Gemara answers this, and it will be answering it with what appears in our Gemara as a long answer. You'll notice in the space immediately to the left-hand side of the Gemara text, between the Gemara and the Rashbam, there's a circled tuf with a vertical dashed line. This indicates a long teretz marking. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Lihuna, Ha Moni Rabbi Akiva Hi. Rav Nachman tells us that Rav Huna told him that the source that we just read with the koroilo expression entitling the receiver to receive both, this is according to Rabbi Akiva's opinion. The Dayak Lishna Yisera, as we have seen him earlier in this Masichta, pays attention. He emphasizes extra expressions. In other words, the employment of an extra expression is not mere extra talk, but it has legal significance. It creates a situation where that which is ordinarily not entitled, because an extra expression was used in the agreement, it represents an extra portion to be received. Disnan, we now have a Tanaic source involving someone who sold a house. Generally speaking, in the sale of a house, the holes, the diggings that people have in their homes for storage purposes are not included in the sale of a house. They're viewed as a separate piece of real estate. This is a topic that was discussed at great length earlier in the Masichta. True, the receiver, the purchaser of the house, he acquires the house, but he does not acquire the pit that's in the house. Who owns the pit? The seller. He retains the pit for himself. What does the law say with regard to the path to the pit, easement rights, the rights to get to the pit? Who owns that? So, let us continue with the source. Disnan, veloi es habor, upon the sale of a house, there is not included in it the pit, velo es hadus, another type of pit, afalpi shekosav loy umka veruma, even though in the document of sale it was stated that I'm selling you the house with its depths and its height. Depths and height are included, but that does not include the pit. Vitzorech likach loy derech. Divrei Rabbi Akiva, the seller of the house, who is retaining for himself the pit, has to buy the easement rights from the purchaser in order for him, the seller, to get to the pit that he, the seller, retains for himself. The Chachomim Omrim, Ein Sorech Likach Loi Derech. The Chachomim disagree and hold that since the seller is retaining the pit, he's also automatically retaining the path to get to the pit. Umoide Rabbi Akiva, Bizman Sha'omar Loi Chutz Me'elu, Rabbi Akiva will concede to the Tanakhama that when the seller says the following, I'm selling you the house except for the pit, the inclusion of the expression except for the pit on the face of things is unnecessary. It's understood that a pit is not included in the sale. So why is it that he said, I'm selling you the house except for the pit? She'eino tzorech likach loy derech. The seller does not have to buy for himself the path, because by using the extra expression, he's thereby indicating that he's retaining for himself not only the pit, but something else, something additional, the path. Alma, we see from this, kiva de lo tzorech v'komar, since an expression that wasn't necessary and was used anyway, litfuye mil sakasi, litfuye is to add something, it's coming to add something. Hocha nami, so too, in our case above, with the three different receivers receiving gifts from the shchimera, and the shchimera used the expression karoilo, kiva de lo tzorech, Vikomar, since it wasn't necessary for him to use the expression koroilo, and he used it all the same, litfuye milsa kaasi. It's coming to add. And as we said before, the addition there was to present the respective receivers with the possibility of receiving both gifts, the owed amount plus the 200 zuz. As we continue in the Gemara, we notice a diamond, which, as we mentioned before, is another source featuring a Shchiv Mirah presenting a gift. In the outside margin, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, Machloikis Rabbi Meir v'Chachomim, Legabi Eidim Shishoimim Shchiv Mirah Shoimer Ploni Chayav Loi Mois. Witnesses that hear a Shchiv Mirah saying that so-and-so owes money. Im yicholim lichtoiv zichron ha'edus, b'li lahakir es ha'uvdot. Can the witnesses who hear the Shchiv Mirah saying that so-and-so owes me money, can witnesses record this information without knowing the facts? All they hear is the Shchiv Mirah saying that so-and-so owes money. If they record it in a document without knowing the facts, what will happen if a Beis Din sees the heirs presenting this document? Will the Beis Din act on their behalf and then entitle them to collect the funds? Once again, the document was written without knowledge of the facts. Tonu Rabbanon. Shchiv Mirah Sh'omar Mono Yesh Li Eitzel Ploni. The Shchiv Mirah says that so-and-so owes me 100. Ho'edim koisvin, afal pi she'ein makirin. The witnesses can record this, even though they don't know if that so-and-so really owes the money. Lefikoch, kishu goive, therefore when he comes to collect, when the heir comes to collect using this document, Tzorech lahavi raya, divrei Rebbe Meir. He will have to bring proof that so-and-so owes the money. The Rashbam, across from here, says, Afal pi she'ein makirin es haloive, o im nischayev loy klum, im lav. The witnesses recording this can write down the information, even though they don't recognize the borrower, or they don't know whether that man owes money. The Rashbam continues, Lefikach, therefore, shenasu chachomim reshus le'edim lichtoiv mashishamu, since the chachomim gave permission to witnesses to record that which they heard, afal pi she'ein yoidim im emes im sheker, even though they don't know whether it's true or false, tzrichen hayesoimim lahavi raya ligvois me'oisei ploni, since it was recorded without the witnesses knowing the facts, the heirs, when they come to collect, they'll have to bring proof. The edim halalu mashishamu mipi hashchiv meira kosvu v'hem lo yadu imamish b'dvarav im lav. They simply recorded that which they heard, but they don't know if there's substance to his words. Continuing in the source, v'chachomim oimrim ein kosvin ela im kein makirin. According to the Chachamim, witnesses cannot record unless they know the facts. The Rashbam explains, because we take into consideration the possibility of what's known as a Beis Din Toyin, of a court that may make a mistake. Namely, a court might see a document with witnesses signed, so they might think this is a solid document and act upon it. So, according to the Chachamim, the halacha takes a preemptive measure in anticipation of a Beis Din Toyin and says witnesses cannot record the words of the Shemra unless they know the facts. That being the case, so a Beis Din will then be able to act upon such a document. So that's what we see here under the Chachomim. In the source, Chachomim said, Ein kosen elim kein makir in lefikoch kishu goyveh. As a result of that, when the heir comes to collect the debt, ein tzorech lahavi raya. He doesn't have to bring any additional proof. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Li Huna. We saw a similar presentation above where Rav Nachman told us that which Rav Huna taught him. Tana. Here, Rav Huna teaches a Tanaic source to Rav Nachman. Rabbi Meir Oimer, Ein Koisvin, V'chachomim Oimrim Koisvin. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that witnesses cannot write unless they know the facts. The Chachomim, that Rabbi Meir is of the opinion of Ein Koisvin. And the Chachomim hold Koisvin. You'll notice that the names in this source and their shitas are different from the source taught just before. In the source taught just before, we notice the Chachomim said Ein Koisvin, and here the Chachomim say Koisvin. The Af Rabbi Meir Lo Omar, Rabbi Meir himself said his halacha of Ein Koisvin. Why did he say Ein Koisvin? Elamishum Beis Din Toyin. Because Rabbi Meir was afraid of the situation of the possibility of a court making a mistake, thinking that once witnesses signed a document that they checked out all the facts. Therefore, the Rabbi Meir in this second version says, Ein Koisvin, let it be that the witnesses should not write unless they know the facts. Therefore, in the event of a Beis Din who comes along to rely on a signed document, they'll have what to rely on. Omar Ravdimi Minahar Da'a Hilchisa Ein Choshishin LeBeis Din Toyin. What does that mean for us? That means that witnesses can sign a document based on what they heard from the Shechiv Meirah, even if they don't know the facts. And I'm not worried about a Beis Din coming to rely automatically on that document. In other words, Beis Din, upon seeing a document recording such a story, will themselves come to check out the facts. So we don't have to worry about some kind of collection that was done illegally. The Gemara asks, "Umay shno midarava?" Here we had a statement that says, "Ein choshishin lebeis din toyim." How is this different than that which Rava teaches? The Omar Rava, "Ein cholzin elo in kein makirin, v'ein mimanin elo in kein makirin." There are two procedures that are alluded to in Rava's halacha. We have them noted as Aleph Ein Cholzin and Beis Ein Ma'anin. Ein Cholzin is the procedure performed, the ceremony that's performed when a brother-in-law and sister-in-law do not want to pursue a Yibum marriage, where a person died leaving no sons, but yes, leaving a surviving brother. In the event that the widow doesn't marry the brother, the surviving brother, then the chalitza, the shoe removal ceremony, takes place. This source says, this teaching that is of Rava, says that the shoe removal ceremony, the chalitza ceremony, does not take place unless the judges, the three judges that are present, know the parties, are makir the parties. They know that this is the brother-in-law, and this is a brother-in-law and sister-in-law. In other words, that this is the brother of the deceased and this is the widow. Similarly, mi'un doesn't take place. Mi'un is a situation where there was a derabbanan marriage, a rabbinically sanctioned marriage between a girl under 12, a ketana, and her supposed husband. And this is a case where she was married off by her brother or her mother. And this type of marriage, where she's presented as a girl under 12 by her brother, has rabbinic strength, not Doraisa strength. Hence, when she reaches 12, she has the option of saying, "I don't want to continue with this man." So we say, Rava teaches us that the miun, the rejection of the continuation of the marriage, doesn't take place unless the judges know the parties. Lefikach, as a result of this requirement, of the requirement of the judges to know who the parties are that are involved, kosvin get chalitza, the get miun, v'afalpi she'ein makirin. Therefore, the witnesses that see this procedure take place in front of a Beis Din, the witnesses are able to sign a document, the get chalitza or get miun, indicating that such a ceremony took place, even though they, the witnesses, don't recognize the party's concern, because the Beis Din certainly investigated and wouldn't have allowed the process to go ahead unless they knew who the parties were. So the Gemara tells us that the witnesses, as we just said, have a right to prepare these documents, even though they don't require. Mishum de choshishim lebeis din toyin. This is an outgrowth of the concern that we have for a Beis Din Toim. Namely, we don't say that let a document be prepared by the witnesses, even if the court doesn't know who the parties are, because in the eventuality that these women will want to remarry, the subsequent court will check out the matters. We don't rely on a subsequent court checking out the matters. Why is it that we don't rely on the subsequent court checking out the matters, but rather insist on the initial court checking out the matters? It's for this very reason, because we're choshish that that second court might make a mistake and rely on things having been done ahead of time. Let us take a look at the Rashbam. My taimo, ein cholzin elim kein makirin. Why is it that we don't do chalitza unless the judges recognize the parties? Lav mishum, is it not because the choshishim lebezdin toyin could appreciate that we're taking into consideration the erring court, as we've explained? If you would say that chalitza can take place without the first court recognizing the parties, yitu bezdin sheni lahasiya b'lo b'dika, a second court will make a mistake and allow her, the Yavoma or the Mima'enes, to marry without them, the second court, checking out. Shu Sivurin, Lo Chotsu, Elaim Kain Hikiru. They will think that Chalitza didn't take place unless the first court knew who they were. Shetoyin Bahalochazu. Uliel Nami, Nechush Lebezdin Toin. Likewise, in the earlier teaching, let us also be Choshesh for a Bezdin Toin, Volema, Ein Kaisvin, Rebbe Meir. And let us go and follow Rebbe Meir that says that you don't write the speaking of the Shchiv Meira unless they knew the facts. So the question then simply is, why is it that Rav Dimi Minahardo allows witnesses to record the comments of the Shchiv Meira even if the witnesses don't know the facts? And Rav Dimi is not worried about a second court coming to simply rely on the document at face value. And yet, Rava's teaching says we are choshish for a bezdin toin, and as a result of that, we insist on the first bezdin knowing all the facts, because we are concerned with the fact that a second bezdin will rely blindly on that which they see in front of them, namely a document that they see in front of them without checking out the facts. The Gemara answers, Loi. There's no question over here. Bezdin boser bezdin lo daiki. Bezdin o boser eindim daiki. In the case of a second bezdin coming on the heels of a first bezdin, the second bezdin won't investigate. They will rely on the actions taken by a first bezdin. That happens to be the case in chalitza and miyun. These are procedures that take place in the front of a formal bezdin. As a result of that, the second bezdin will come to rely on that, on whatever is recorded by a first bezdin or a process having taken place in front of a bezdin, and the second bezdin won't check out the facts. However, a bezdin seeing something that's recorded by witnesses only, namely the case of the Shchiv Meira, without having had a bezdin present at the first stage, there a bezdin won't come to rely blindly on that which is recorded by witnesses, but they will check out the facts. Hence, there's no inconsistency between Rav Dimi's ruling that says Ein Choshishin LeBezdin Toyin, as opposed to the teaching of Rava that said we are Choshish LeBezdin Toyin. As we just said, Rav Dimi is talking about a Bezdin coming on the heels of the action of witnesses alone, the Shchiv Meira case, and Rava is talking about a bezdin coming on the heels of an action that took place in the presence of a first bezdin, and in such a case, there is room to be choshesh that out of respect, out of honor, the second bezdin will come to rely blindly on that which was done by the first bezdin. Hence, Rava insists that the first bezdin must know all the facts. With this, we complete our shiur for today.